bad week. Ho, ho, ho. Hello, I'm Steve Bunce.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
And ho, 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 welcome to It's Been a Bad Week.
Are you a pirate? What's going on? Yes, as the last of the pine needles is trampled into the shag pile and the final bottle of unwanted aftershave is poured down the toilet, we're back to remind you of the true meaning of Christmas.
That's right, ho, 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 because the greatest gift anyone can give to the world at Christmas is to have a worse time of it than anyone else, so we can all have a good laugh at their expense.
Which could be why the Queen's speech remains so popular. But it's also why we have once more been scouring the newspapers and websites of the world for tales of Christmas catastrophe and festive misfortune.
Yes, so as you wait for the batteries in your child's Finding Nemo Squidmobile to finally run out. Yep, there it goes. Now, you can either do this. That's the tactic I use. Or you can sit back, put those novelty Christmas socked feet up and enjoy the unfortunate sissies of others.
And as always, we're joined on our sleigh ride around the Grotto of Gloom by Santa's little hinderers, the best bar humbuggers in the business, the woman who puts the money in the Christmas pudding and chokes your granny, Sue Perkins.
The madman next door with the flashing Santa train, whose house is lit up brighter than the Eddystone Lighthouse, Toby Longworth.
And the man with a thousand songs, and they're all about bloody Christmas, Rich Benn. And, of course, he's still out there like a radiophonic equivalent of Dickens' Tiny Tim pressing his nose against the glass of Ronnie Scott's opulent interior in his sad old white transit of Christmas past. It's our man with the sound effects, Van Man. So, Van Man, what have you been up to this week?
Yes, for once I actually recognise that sound. That is, of course, the BBC Light Entertainment Christmas Party, where you're never less than 10 feet away from a water rat.
But now,
the older members of the audience got that.
And now it's time for us to embark on this week's quest for the winning loser of
the Worst Week of the Week Award, awarded weekly on a week-by-week basis. Oh, my head. Do you mind, please?
After we've rounded up the bad weeks in our imaginatively titled
Bad Week Roundup.
Yes, as the Alka-Seltzer is fizzing in the glass, it's time for those genuine news items we couldn't fit in anywhere else, starting with
father of a baby boy.
Yes, new father Russell Crowe says he's looking forward to the tantrums, the vomiting and the screaming, and added that having a baby wouldn't stop him doing any of those things.
Mobile home.
Police have launched a national unit to combat mobile phone theft. They're advising people to keep their mobile somewhere they'll never be noticed, like Rio Ferdinand's pocket.
Alco Pop Idol.
Pop Idol loser Mark Rhodes has had a limited edition beer brewed in his honour. There's also one based on Michelle, which is full-bodied with a small head and a very short shelf life.
Lock, stock and two empty cabinets.
Vinnie Jones has had his shotguns confiscated by police. He insists he's only ever used them in a responsible manner. He once held one to Guy Ritchie's head and said, "Never make a film with your wife again." And that's the end of the Bad Week Roundup, so let's get on with
Section 1.
Our first Bad Week from Hugh.
Oh, thank you. Now, it's been a bad week for people, because the day is coming, ladies and gentlemen, when we will no longer be needed. The day is coming when we will be replaced by wallpaper. And apparently so. Here's for why, because in Germany, a country where they must surely have written different tunes to that one is the only one we ever use.
No, they haven't.
No, they haven't. In Germany, single people who really don't want to be, those who say nein to ein and really want to find someone else to slap their thighs, well, they're being offered an alternative to actually having to invite people round or go through the tedious grind of being sociable, because a German company has invented wallpaper with life-sized pictures of ordinary people. Yep. To create the feeling that
there are other people in the room with them. Mm.
It's great, isn't it? Apparently the the award-winning wallpaper won an award for paranoia-inducing home decoration of the year. is expected to become a bestseller in Germany because, according to its designer, Suzanne Schmidt...
It depicts life-size, well-groomed people in everyday poses, like sipping wine or sitting expectantly on the couch, and alleviates feelings of loneliness, especially at the Christmas times.
Mm. Now, leaving aside for a moment the fact that they aren't really everyday poses I recognise from my own household, because who would want wallpaper of a bleary-eyed man eating toast in his pants? Does she genuinely think that people will be able to fool themselves? That people will, for example, walk into their own toilets and say...
Oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't realise you were in here. By the way, that's the 15th time you've forgotten to lock the door.
Of course they won't. See, no, people are going to get in at night, wander into their living rooms and go...
God in heaven, my only friends are wallpaper!
Wallpaper from the Sanderson Nobby No-Mates collection. Going to make you feel worse. Each fake friend apparently consists of two or three rolls of UV-resistant paper, giving you a good hour or two of staring loneliness full in the face as you paste your new best mate to the wall. And then at the end, you have the benefit of a whole collection of happy, good-looking people talking to each other around the edge of the room while you're left on your own in the middle. But don't imagine that you have to sit there staring at the same faces day after day, no. Apparently, these people can be pulled off as often as needed, as it were. opening up the possibility of actually starting a relationship with one of them. You could stick one of them to your face and go around telling people you've become very close. Stick some cut-out possessions on your walls to make it look like they're moving in, and then finally dump them for being shallow or two-dimensional. Anyway, that's my candidate, wallpaper people. Thank you.
Very good.
Very good, Stephen Punt.
Yes,
go,
well, my candidates for the World's Worst Week are 200 employees of the US Navy on a US base near Southampton. They had a very bad week because they were ordered to attend the Christmas party under threat of disciplinary action. Now, I think that's quite bad. And the commander, US Naval Commander Langley, wrote a memo to his staff which read...
If you feel like I am trying to force fun upon you, then you are correct.
It's nice, isn't it? He went on...
Let me make it clear that every employee's duty on December 19th is the base Christmas party. All employees not on approved leave will participate in the party.
Excellent. Very nice. The last person to send out a memo like that was actually Davros when he sent it to the inhabitants of the planet Skaro.
All inhabitants not on approved leave will participate in the Christmas party or your employment will be terminated. Terminated!
Fantastic. Yeah, perhaps it was going to be like all-American military Christmas parties. Halfway through, a big fake turkey arrives, carrying the food. Anyway, we all know what the office party is like, and, you know, you've got to feel sorry for these 200 people.
All right, people, listen up. You will report for party duty. 1,800 hours, full uniform, paper hats. Tucker, Michelson.
Sir, yes, sir.
Your objective is the ginger girl from accounts. I want to surround it by 2215. Michelson, you scout ahead, then let Tucker move in.
But, sir...
No argument, soldier. She doesn't go for guys with curly hair. You knew that when you volunteered. Decker.
Sir.
The tall guy from personnel you have secretly fancied all year. He will be bombed by 2130. We anticipate you should be able to secure your objective by 2245. Good luck, everybody. We will rendezvous on the dance floor at midnight, and God willing, we will embarrass ourselves to Kylie. Good luck.
So that is...
Okay, listen up! You heard what the commander said. Now you people remember, anyone moons on the photocopier before 9 p.m., I will bust your ass! After 9 p.m., my ass will bust the photocopier. Move out!
That's my candidate, Press Gang Party People.
Well done.
Mr. Ben...
Mr. Ben.
A candidate in song.
Indeed.
Didn't turn up for his drug test back in September. When they said, where have you been? He just responded, I lost my diary and my mobile's on the blink. The FA checked his phone bill and they didn't know what to think. His name is Rio and his last name's Ferdinand. He thought they'd slap his wrist and find him a few
yes. One or two 30-something ladies in the audience getting a little bit overexcited there. So, Van Man, who did you like from that lot?
His name is Rio and he's had a terrible week.
So, Van Man, unbelievably extending his sympathy to the multimillionaire footballer for the richest football club in the world. So there we go.
The man has been told to take an 8-month holiday on full pay.
Anyway, he apparently gets our sympathy. So that goes forward for...
Sorry, I'm late. Where's Rickard Wiggerboard?
Thank you there. Which brings us very swiftly on to...
Section 2.
Steve.
Ah, yes. Now, it's been a bad week for MPs who use mobile phones. Why? Because an MP was thrown out of the Commons for using one. Tory Henry Bellingham's minor breach of parliamentary rules took place during question time.
Is the right honourable gentleman aware that he has just made a grave mistake? With O2's package, you could be talking at just 4p a minute and have 100 free text.
Upgrade!
Take your tariff! Take it now! Upgrade!
Now, the rule is, in fact, you can't have mobiles on in the House of Commons, for obvious reasons.
Right, honourable members, this morning at 7 a.m, British forces went into action in order... Oh, bloody hell, hang on, just a second. Yep, hi. Yeah, hi, Cherie. What? No, just a bottle of the cheap Bulgarian red. There's only press called in, those bugger all about white. That's okay, right, yeah, see you later, yeah. Anyway, as I was saying...
Sorry, Tony, that's me, sorry. Hiya, love. Yeah, I know I'm on the telly, yeah. That's why I sit right beside him, yeah. Of course, I'll wave to the kids. Okay, bye.
Right, so this morning at 7 a.m, British forces...
I'm so sorry. Hello there. Yes, I know I'm not on the telly. I'm a conservative. None of us are ever on the telly.
No, you obviously can't have them, because it would be a nightmare. Hi, I'm on a committee. Although, with the publicity that this story got, I think there's an opportunity here, a marketing opportunity for mobile companies. But it's... I rather like it, it's good. But it's actually weirder than this, though, because Bellingham wasn't actually talking on his mobile. No, he said in his sad defence...
I was sitting quite near the front of the chamber with my mobile, which has a digital camera attached. The clerk obviously realised and told the speaker.
He was using his photo messaging thing in the Commons. It's unbelievable, isn't it? Look, it's the Prime Minister. I'm really here. I'm a Tory and I really won a seat. Anyway, that's my candidate, Mobile MP Phone Man.
Sue.
Now, Sue.
You got one?
Yes.
Yep, this story comes all the way from GB and concerns a thief by the name of Patrick Corby. Patrick, because his mother was Irish, and Corby, because once he was sandwiched between two hot metal plates in the corner of a 3-star hotel room. Now, Mr. Corby is a very, very thorough burglar. He broke into an unoccupied house. And what do you think he took? The video? The hi-fi? The plasma screen nonce box with surround sound? The cuddly toy? No, he took none of those. Mr. Corby looked around and decided that
I like the kitchen.
Yeah, he liked the kitchen.
I like the kitchen.
Yeah, he likes the kitchen. Good for you. Good for you, my
kitchen.
Man. You like it, do you?
I like the kitchen.
He likes it. He liked it so much he decided to steal it. All of it. So first of all, he unscrewed the doors. Then he dismantled the units. And then the fridge and the freezer. And then he thought, I like the carpet, so he took the carpet as well. Now, this lengthy procedure took a total of 3 whole days. You'd think Mr. Corby the burglar might want a bit of a rest after all that, but no, not Mr. Corby, no. He decided to take this stolen booty and load it into a van. And then drive it back home. And guess what?
Hello, the kitchen.
That's right. He reassembled the units. He screwed on all the doors. And he lovingly even relaid the carpet. Now, what really upsets me about this story, apart from the fact that Toby is playing this man as if he's got serious learning difficulties...
I like the kitchen! Yeah,
I know you do! What upsets me is that Mr. Corby's been jailed for 2 years after pleading guilty. That's 2 years. All this man did was correctly dismantle and reinstall a kitchen. Now, I know people who charge 40 quid an hour to do that while slagging off gypsies, gays and foreigners. This man shouldn't be in prison. He should be adopted by IKEA. But the good news is, Corby's adapting quite well to life behind bars. He never has to risk his health in the showers, as his cell now has 12 sinks, 3 baths and a jacuzzi. So that's my candidate, the man who stole the kitchen sink. Shanks for the memory.
That's very good. Also, Van Man gets paid by the sound effects, so he's probably off to the Bahamas now. Hugh.
Yeah, now I've got a bad week. It's been a bad week for people who don't expect their bath salts to explode. You poor, deluded fools. Take heed now from the awful warning given by a vengeful god of bath salts, because one Pam Edwards from Woodford, Illinois, which is in America, the well-known country, I just made a purchase at the Woodford County Kiddie Bazaar and was just reclining in her bed in the middle of the night when the cream soda bath fizz that she'd bought at the bazaar exploded. Pam told the local paper, the fantastically named Bloomington Pantograph. Pantograph, what the hell is one of them?
It's not unusual to be lulled by the one. Chuck your knickers up your girls and you a pantograph, isn't it?
Or... Or perhaps...
It was a long way to go.
Yeah, it was.
It was a good joke,
but it was a long way. Perhaps it's a measuring device in gentlemen's outfitters.
Well, sir, you'll be pleased to know that you are an 8 on the pantograph.
Well, it must be cold in here. I'm usually a 12.
Sorry about that. Anyway, the... it's not unusual. Anyway, the... The exploding bath salts. Pam told the Bloomington Pantograph...
Oh, it was amazing. Happened about 1:30 in the morning and sounded like a gunshot. I'm sure if anybody was close by, it would have hurt them.
Yeah, apparently...
Real bad.
A chemical reaction between the ingredients created a gas exerting a pressure in the sealed plastic bottle, kind of cross between matey and a Molotov cocktail. Oh, your bottle's a bottle of fun. You keep them in the bath. They're loved by everyone. They're even good for a... See what I mean? Bath salts that don't so much relax you as leave you unconscious. And what could be better than that? So that is my candidate, Pam, the exploding bath salt lady.
So, Van Man, if you could put your footballing allegiances aside this time and tell us, who are you going to pick from Section 2? It's Rio Ferdinand again! Oh, no, it must be the MPs. It's the MPs who aren't allowed to use their mobiles in the Commons. So, MPs and Rio Ferdinand, in possibly the least sympathetic list of finalists we've ever had on the show, are going forward for...
The Worst Week of the Week Award, awarded weekly on... Hang on. Yeah. Oh, right, the Fat Bird one, fantastic.
It's all right. He focus grouped that comment later and it was rewritten for him. Anyway, that means we can move on to...
Section 3.
And we begin with Hugh.
Thank you. Now a story from newspaper Dagblad van het Noorden, from which I glean that it's been a bad week for Dutch shoppers, particularly a Dutch shopper called...
Karst Keilstra. Hey, how do you do?
It's very good, yes. He was arrested in jail because he refused to carry a shopping basket around his local supermarket. That's right, in Holland, a country where you can buy hard drugs and donkey porn 24 hours round the clock, you can be nicked for not carrying a shopping basket. Here are the facts of the case. Karst, 32, from Assen, had popped into his local shop just before closing time to get some veal for his evening meal. No one's done that since the 1940s, have they?
Yeah, what would you like, then? I've got a lovely spot of veal, now a spot of steak, some beautiful lamb chops that we don't need to bother the old ration book about, as long as you have sex with me.
The innocent 1940s. Anyway, it wasn't like that for Karst, because when he got to the meat counter, as opposed to putting his meat on the counter, the assistant refused to serve him, because he wasn't carrying a basket. Karst said...
Hey, I told her I didn't want a basket, because it was nearly closing time. She wouldn't listen, but she came back with the shop owner. She told me it was the rules. I said, don't be ridiculous. I left the money on the counters and I went home.
Yeah, and Karst thought that was that. But then about an hour later, a police car pulled up at his house and arrested him. Now... It's a bit sinister, don't you think, that the supermarket knew where he lived? Tesco's absolutely no idea where I live, which is why I no longer use their online home delivery service. cast was bundled into a police car and taken down to the station where they kept him in a cell until the supermarket decided what to do with him. And why a cell? Well, the police spokesman said...
Well, we couldn't just leave him at the desk.
No, not without a basket. Anyway, they did let him go once he paid a £95 fine and promised to stay out of the shop for 12 months. God, that must have been tough. He surely was desperate to get back in there. Why do they want people to use baskets in the first place?
When the goods are all in the shopping basket, employees can clearly see what it contains. It's to prevent shoplifting.
Oh, right, because that'll work. No one will be able to stick a chicken in their pants or a pocket a handful of Mars bars if they're carrying a shopping basket. It's not the goods in the basket you have to worry about. It's the goods that aren't in the basket. You see, make them carry a basket in each hand. Now, there's your answer. Yeah. So that's my candidate, Dutch basket case, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Turby.
All right, well, this week should have been a perfect week for Ross and Tricia Ladass, not Lardass, from Sydney, Australia, because this week they had a baby. No, they didn't. No, they got married.
Aww.
Isn't that lovely? The weather was perfect, the ceremony had passed off without a hitch, and Tricia had never looked more beautiful to her handsome groom as they walked proudly out of St. Demetrios' church, arm in arm and ready to face whatever life had to throw at them. And the first thing it had to throw at them was this.
Ow!
A punch in the face from an irate neighbour who, in a display of colossal overreaction, was accusing Mr. Ladass of setting off a car alarm. Not wishing to spoil his big day, and in deference to the fact that he was in a church, Mr. Ladass turned the other cheek.
Bloody hell!
Pretty big mistake. Now, I've never been to an Australian wedding, but it appears that the brawl is a much looked-forward-to part of the ceremony.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome onto the floor the groom and his new father-in-law.
Seconds away, round one!
Go on, kill him! Oh, go for the mats! Go on, grab him!
A church usher tried to intervene and was struck over the head with a hat stand. The maid of honour launched herself into the melee. There we are. And a guest who tried to calm things down was rather fantastically hit with an axe.
Timber!
Now, why anyone would have an axe at a wedding is something a bit beyond me. Is it another Australianism? Something old, something new, something borrowed, something lethal. Anyway, inevitably, the police arrived and got out the pepper spray, which they sprayed into the bride's face.
Ah, my melting retina!
Yes. Before managing to quell the battling wedding guests with more spray, riot shields and baton charges. The wedding photographs were shot at the station, with everyone holding a board with their name and number under their chin. The new Mrs. Ladass later said from under the bandages...
The day was perfect, then this happened. We've been made to look like idiots.
But may I just say, on behalf of everyone on this show, please don't change, peppered riot wedding brawl couple, because I can't wait for the christening of your first child.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we all know that Christmas is a time for drinking. Christmas and drink go together like nose and pavement. Now, obviously, on this show, we wouldn't want to glamorise drinking. Another Manhattan, please, Raquel. But there have been a number of seasonally alcohol-related bad weeks around. In Finland, there was a female judge in her late 50s, and she was charged... This is absolutely true. She was charged with being drunk in charge of a courtroom.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, how do you find the defendant?
You look in the dock, Your Honour.
Sure you do. Ah, there he is. Right, we can start now.
Although on the plus side, this woman has now got a job dubbing Cat Slater for the Scandinavian market. That's pretty weird. But as Tigger would say, there's even weirderer. There's a story from next door in Norway where a man was done this week for drunk driving. That's not bad, you say, but there's a unique twist. He was taking his test at the time. That really is astonishing. Apparently the giveaway was that when he was asked,
"Can you read the number plate on that blue Saab over there?"
he replied,
"I love you."
And he was failed, although they did swap phone numbers. But my candidate, though, is none of these, fine though they be. No, my candidate is a man from Riga in Latvia, who is officially, and I do mean officially...
the drunkest person in the world.
The drunkest person in the world. It's true. Leivs Vidra, a spokesman for the Latvian police, related the story, and the bloke is already on the album.
The drunkest people in the world ever.
Along with Oliver Reed, Boris Yeltsin, and Girls Aloud. So what happened? What happened was that Riga police picked up a man in the street who was found to have a blood alcohol level of 7.2 parts per million. Now, as Mr. Zvidra helpfully explains...
An average person would vomit at around 1.2, lose consciousness at 3, and stop breathing at the level of about 4 parts per million.
Yeah. At 4.5, they start crying during a Muppet Christmas Carol. At 4.9, they start thinking they can crack Brazil nuts with their teeth. And at 5.2, they start fancying the Curry's adverts.
I tell you what, she can snip my plants any day.
No, that's enough. Let's not get sordid. Basically, the story is that apparently this man in Latvia was so drunk that technically he should have been dead. And yet, just a few hours later, was on stage playing the opening chords of Brown Sugar. Absolutely extraordinary. So, for Christmas consumption, way, way beyond social, I give you Latvian clinically dead drunk man.
Now it's your third and final choice. So, who do you want to make it through to our grand final from that lot?
The drunkest person in the world ever!
Well done, Latvian clinically dead drunk man. You're joining Rio Ferdinand and the MPs using mobile phones in this week's grand final.
Now, audience, it's down to you to decide the winner of...
The worst week, wee willy winky with... Ooh, look, a pound!
Latvian, but speaks perfect English. Right. OK, Ronnie Scott, people, let's pick the last winner of the year.
It's official. We have a result. This week's guest announcer is Rio Ferdinand, but he's failed to turn up. Van Man, the drum roll, please. In third place is Rio Ferdinand. Oh, the sympathy for him. In second place is mobile phone using MPs, which means that this week's winner is the drunkest man in the world.
Congratulations to the drunkest man in the world. We haven't actually got him a prize yet, but we'll think of something when he comes round sometime in 2007.
Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
All right. Now, you're listening to It's Been a Bad Week, which features Steve Palahu, Dennis, and Mitch Bennett. Toby Longworth, and Sue Pack. It was written by the cast of really David Quantley, David Spiders, Alan Stafford, Rich Warden, Colin Birch. Broadcast assistants, Sarah Tomblin. Producer was Nick Cannon. Executive producer was Liz Anstey. It's Been a Bad Week is a Southern Law production for BBC Radio 2.
If you'd like to come to a recording of It's Been a Bad Week, please call 020-7845-6809 or send an email to bandweek@celador.co.uk. 88.